I said I was going to leave this subject, but I want to say one final thing on it that I intended to say yesterday. Down through the centuries, students, and in fact, let me see how Granville Sharp says it here. In the study of warfare, great men have concluded that there are some overriding principles which, if followed, will always tend toward success in battle, and with equal positiveness, if neglected or ignored, will tend toward defeat or even destruction. These principles have been entitled the principles of war. And you'd be surprised how easy it is to be a general. There's only about 8 or 10 things you have to keep in mind. And throughout history, the general who has kept the most of these in their proper proportion has been victorious over the one who was less proportionate in these things. Now, let me just give them to you for what they might be worth to you. 10 of them. The British only have 8, but the Americans have 10. Number one is the maintenance of the objective. Number two is offensive action. And this doesn't refer to the, the personality. Number three is concentration. Number four is mobility. Number five is security. Number six is surprise. Number seven is cooperation. Number eight is communication, and this really has more to do with logistics than it does communicating as we think of it. Number nine, economy of force. And number 10, pursuit. So that's all a general has to keep in mind, is to make sure that he does these 10 things, and he will win over somebody that's less skillful than him. Today, we want to get into two subjects. I trust we can cover both of them. The first one deals with how to solve a problem. And the second subject is how to make the best use of time. I want to be careful in these sessions that we don't leave the Holy Spirit out. One of the questions that I am frequently asked as people come to visit with me, what should I do about my life insurance? And I've had this question asked me enough times that I've got a stock answer on it. I said, well, the first thing you should do is get a revelation from God on how long you're going to live. You determine from him the date of your death, then you will know exactly how much insurance to get. Isn't that good advice? That solve all the problems? I said, now, if you are so unspiritual that you can't get that information, I suggest that you get a scriptural conviction out of the Bible as to what you should do. Now, if you're unsuccessful in this, you may have to use your mind and just sort of reason it out. And of course, it's generally men that we're talking to about this, that statistically, your wife will outlive you by 9 years. So that's just something to take into consideration. Somebody statistically is going to take care of her 9 years after you're dead. And I think these statistics generally refer to the first wife. It's going to outlive you by 9 years. So if you can't get a revelation, you can't get a conviction, then I suggest you just use your reason to figure out what the situation is. You know what your income is. You know how much your wife would need if you die. You know the state of your health, and you know your income and so forth. Try to figure out something. Now, in these things we're talking about, when you've got a problem, how are you going to solve it? Well, the first thing to do is get a revelation. Get God to tell you what the answer to the problem is. And in the Old Testament, many times this happened. If you can't get the answer by revelation, then try it by conviction. But if you can't, you may have to use other resources. And 2 Timothy 1:7 tells us that God has not given us a spirit of fear, but, toward the last verse, what's he given us? A sound mind. And I think this is always a last resort to solve a problem. But occasionally, God expects and permits us to use this resource in solving a problem. Now, I'm going to use the four questions in problem solving that Dale Carnegie teaches. I have his little pamphlet here with me this morning that deals with two subjects. I thought I'd put it in here. How to save time and get far better results in conferences. And a testimony in the beginning here is, I'm going to show you how one business executive eliminated 75% of all the time he formerly spent in solving business problems. So when he used this method, immediately he had 75% more time available for productive effort than he had before. Now, we have recently had a seminar out here for Christian executives, and had the experts from all over the country. They call them resource men. They don't call them experts. And I suppose that we had the finest material that's available on this subject. The main resource men were from the American Management Association. And I looked at their solutions. I've looked at all I've seen in books, and I don't believe any of them are any better than these four that I'm going to give you. Some of them use more. So, in solving a problem, you need a pencil and paper. But you start out, what is the problem? Now, as you've heard many times, when you identify and isolate the problem, well, generally the solution is obvious, and you don't generally have to go any further in here. But we have a tendency to deal with symptoms. I recall in our economy program we've had going for the last year here, we decided not too long ago to combine the bank run and the mail run and have it at 3:30 in the afternoon. Now, there are many, many people whose lives revolve around the Daily Mail, and we have a few of them here at Glen Eyrie. And when we made the mail run at 4 o'clock instead of 7:30 in the morning, I tell you, we began to get a little static. So, I had some reports trickle back on this. So I called in two or three people that were having problems. I think I've already weakened my case here with something I said that I shouldn't. But I found out that in no case was the fact that we had changed the mail run to 4 o'clock the problem. That wasn't a problem. There were deeper problems with the administration than this problem. This was a symptom. And we could have changed the time of the mail run and it wouldn't have corrected the problem. This was just a symptom of an underlying problem. So, what we want to know, what's the real problem now, of which this is a symptom. Now, we're going to try to illustrate this as we go through. But we had one of our staff men who was running a servicemen center for the CBMC. And began to get quite a bit of static. And this service center director lost weight, got ulcers, finances went down, public relations was poor, and things just weren't good in this particular situation. So I inherited the privilege of looking in, see what we could do about this. So there are all kinds of problems. Poor public relations, finances low, service center director's health. But none of these were the problem. You see, what was the real problem? So after working on it for a while, I came to the conclusion that the service center director had lost heart in this job. And everything else was a symptom. Now, we could have corrected every one of these symptoms. Finances, beefed up the public relations, sent him to a doctor, and so forth, but none of these things would have corrected it until we found out why he had lost heart and then helped him get restored. Then all these things corrected because he was a very capable person. But you know what I mean? Dealing with symptoms all the time. What is the problem? Now, this is very often the most difficult. We're going to work out together a simple and a complex problem. And we probably won't get to the second subject till tomorrow. What is the problem? Not the symptoms. What is it? Now, number two. Now, we're well on our way to solution. When we know what caused the problem. Are we not? Now, in this particular case that I just used as an illustration, what had caused the problem? That we put this man in a job for which he was not completely equipped. We didn't give him the support and the backing that he needed. We left him on his own. He didn't have the resources. This was our mistake. It wasn't his. What caused the problem? And we simply said that we miscast this individual. We gave him something he wasn't equipped to do at this particular time. That's what caused it. The main cause. There were other things, but this was the main cause. Now, number three. Now, in using this approach, whether it's in a conference between two people or a lot of people or just yourself, there is one rule that's very, very important, and that is that nobody is permitted, this is about the only ground rule you have, to comment on somebody else's solution. Because they say, well, that never worked. Then immediately, you're discussing one solution. So no matter how good or how poor they are, ground rule is no comment. And everybody can throw out anything. The ones that are foolish will be very obvious to everybody. You don't have to point them out. Yes, the ground rule is, now we're going to solve a problem in a little bit, and I'm going to ask you for solutions. And the ground rules are that nobody comments on another person's suggestion. That's the ground rule. Okay? Follow me now? Is that clear? Otherwise, you will stifle participation. So, write out every possible solution to be thought of. And then number four. What is the best solution? And you know, it's amazing how widespread agreement you get on the best solution. You get all the possible solutions to the problem, you look it over, and it's very obvious which is the best. Now I think we should comment here that solutions are not necessarily permanent and not necessarily complete. But at this point of time, the best and most complete thing we can do is this. And we may have to work on it again tomorrow. But for right now, this is what we should do. This is obvious. This is what we should do. Now, isn't that simple? But I assure you, if you do not have a problem-solving technique, that this will be very helpful in most anything that you will face. Now, back to the situation I used as an illustration. What are some possible solutions? Well, one is to fire him, isn't it? Replace him. Close up the center. Tell the board of directors they don't know what they're doing. Up there, tell it's their fault. They should raise the finances. They should take care of the public relations. Now, we had a lot of things we could do. Now, one of the things we could do, having isolated the problem, is to send somebody up to help him. Because this is what caused the problem. The job was too big for him. So this is what we did. Send somebody to stand alongside and support him. That's all we needed to do. So we had a bunch of solutions, but what was the best? Correct the problem. Any comment? When you go into a conference of people to solve a problem, it's very, very helpful to the participants if you know what the problem is. I know that there are certain conferences that I attend in which we solve problems, and I get a little self-conscious. But I found out the discussions go off here and there, and occasionally I have to ask the question, now, will somebody please review for me what the problem is we're trying to solve, because I've lost the trend of the thought here completely. And what you say is interesting, and what you say is interesting, but I've forgotten how it relates to what the problem is. And very often a discussion go off like this. One thing leads to another. And it's very interesting and helpful, but it has nothing to do with the problem. Well, how does that relate to the problem? Now, you have a possible solution. What is the problem? Here's a possible solution. Okay, now let's take two things here and work on it. Now, the first one I'm going to mention here is very easy because the problem is isolated. And here's what it is. Too many people exceed the speed limit on Glen Eyrie. And by the way, in stating the problem, you always state it in the form of a positive statement, never a question. Always a positive statement. Now, I've just made a statement. We have a problem on Glen Eyrie, and too many people disobey the speed limit. We have several reasons for having a speed limit. One is the dust. Another is the wear and tear on the roads. Another is the narrow bridges and the possibility of an accident. Now, that's a problem. What are some causes of this problem? Why? Okay, expediency. What?
Negligence.
Negligence?
Impatience.
Impatience?
Indifference.
What?
Indifference.
Pride.
A person may legitimately be in a hurry to another day of legitimate reason.
Okay. Maybe that legalism shouldn't affect judgment sometimes. Huh? You're on your way to the hospital. A man is dying of a rattlesnake bite. Yeah, that happened once. It's the only time I can think of it happened. I notice that nobody's mentioned that the limits are not posted. Nobody knows what it is. Anybody mention that? Okay, that could be a problem. That could be a cause, couldn't it? Nobody knows what the speed limit is. Okay. Now this is real good. Too low a speed limit. It's not a realistic speed limit. Okay, so this is the fault with the law, then, isn't it? Okay, is there anything else you can think of that caused it?
Through the system discussed before, we always drive 5 or 10 miles over the speed limit and off the limit and try
to run it. Okay. Now, most of the things that have been suggested out are people problems rather than administration problems. But this is a problem. Now, what are some possible solutions? Okay, you would say,
explain the reason for that speed. I think it's mostly people that are here on the
ground.
I'm
just being rich. Some of both. Some of both. Dick?
More conspicuous posted to the speed.
Okay. What do you call that? Orientation? Killed every weekend, so they dug 3 real deep holes right across it. The guy slowed down. Very seldom turnover, but he was slowed down by the time he hit that 3rd one. Okay, instead of making a hole, make a mound in it. Huh? All right, now these are all possible solutions. Now I think one by one, if we were to go through these, we could eliminate and come up with the best one. Now, of these suggested causes, what is the real cause? It's people, isn't it? So, providing that we have a realistic speed limit. There are legitimate reasons. The only way this problem can be solved is through, well, do you agree with me? This area. Right here. It's the only way it can be solved, really, is people have to want to obey the speed limit. Now, what's wrong with this? I have a saying here that I think is very pertinent. And I've used this in my military life. When leadership fails, punishment begins. This is when penalty and punishment takes over, when leadership fails. I don't know how many school teachers we have in the group this morning. Don't want to be too rough on the school teachers. Well, there are many ways to approach this, isn't there? But that's the only way it'll be solved. Now, I think that there's a very possibility here that our speed limit may not be realistic. But we've gone so far as to figure out, and we're interested in people redeeming the time, how many seconds would be saved if we would increase the speed limit on these two little stretches where the danger is lowered. And you can figure out the difference between 50 miles an hour and, say, 30 on that about 60-yard stretch on one and 20-yard stretch on the other. And we feel that the 3 seconds that are gained in getting the gate probably will not seriously jeopardize a person's usefulness as a Christian if he wastes that 3 seconds each time they go in and out. But that's about how much time you would redeem. Now, you've figured out mathematically, it'll vary a little bit depending on what speed, of course, and whether you consider that the 60-yard freeway and the 20-yard freeway that we have where we could increase the speed limit. Well, it's not in all problems that we have the courage or the time to carry out the best solution. But it's also very important in leadership, never make a rule that you don't intend to enforce. Better not have one than to enforce it. Yes?
I have a question on symptoms. How do you determine what is the symptom?
Well, this is very difficult. And I think one of the ways is by trial and error. That if you deal with symptoms, then the problem remains. Mm-hmm. You deal with a half a dozen, the problem is still there. Then you know you haven't gotten it yet. Now, I think that we don't want to go into this in detail because this is something that you can follow through, but I had down as a possible problem to work on would be this. Navigator-trained people too frequently give the image of legalism. Is that a problem? You ever been up against it? People train the navigators far too often appear to be legalistic. You think that's a problem? I don't want to say everybody's legalistic, but there's far too great frequency of this, mechanical, legalistic. Yes. What I mean by legalistic is something similar to what was mentioned Sunday night. You know, a hubless wheel, where that people are doing things for motivation other than the love of Christ. And instead of people doing what we do in the spokes of the wheel, in the liberty of Christian experience, it's more mechanical. Check off list, trying to please somebody, trying to make an impression. Do you think that's a problem? Anybody's around, you're all around the Navigator someplace here. Is that a problem in your area? Ever get accused of that? There must be some fire someplace, because there's so much smoke created on this. Well, what are some of the causes of this image? And of course, one of the causes is that there are people that are. There are other people who create false impressions. But we don't want this, do we? Well, now this is an example of a problem. This is going to take some time, isn't it? To get into all the causes. What are the solutions? What is it that we can work on right now? Well, I don't think I want to take time on this, but you run out of something to do, want a little research, go into this problem and give some solutions. But whatever the problem is, I feel this is a helpful approach. Okay, you want to leave this subject and go on to the next one? Yes, Dick?
I just had one question. Maybe you'd rather leave this for another time, but you said when leadership fails, punishment begins. And you said never make the ruling you don't intend to enforce. So how do you enforce rules without punishment?
Leadership has its limitations. And so I think my real purpose in stating this is don't take the easy way out by just saying, if you do this, here's a punishment as a deterrent. But, of course, the secret is in motivation. But there are some people that that's the only thing they understand is punishment. And to a degree, we're all like this in our own lives. That how about in your health? When do you start getting the proper amount of rest? When it's enforced often, isn't it? It's forced upon you. But this is a different realm. So, anybody else want to comment on this?
Yes, you're talking about discussions today. When you are wanting to set up rules or to enforce rules, it seems like you're the very best way to involve your people that you're working with in setting up the rules and carrying them out. This is a secret of a school teacher, I believe.
Very, very important. There's a book been written on this, on motivating people beyond school age, and gives 9 reasons. It's a book on adult learning. It's very good, and this is one of the things it brings out, that people are about 10 times as apt to cooperate and agree and push something that they've had a part in planning. So this is very true, and that's part of leadership, isn't it? Is involving people in the decision, so they want to carry it out. Well, those are side issues. Now let's shift gears if there's no other comment on this. I'm not trying to sell Dale Carnegie. I think this can be helpful to personal problems, group problems, wherever you are. Now, let's go to another subject. And this is in the matter of the use of time. Now, there's several approaches to this. Dr. Walter Lewis Wilson, some of you have heard him or read his books, told a group of us once actually what happened, he had had a service, and then we had him out to the navigator's home after the meeting. And we were asking questions. And we asked a question about something. He said, well, I'm writing a book on that. And I won't have time to tell all night, but when my book comes out, you can have it. And somebody said, you're writing a book. When in the world are you writing a book? I said, well, during these meetings, I have a lot of people want to see me, and I set up interviews in 15-minute blocks. And he says, every once in a while, we're through before the 15 minutes. He said, I set up meetings from 10 to 2 every day, 15-minute blocks. Everybody wants to see me. So I said, every once in a while, I get through before the 15 minutes. So that's when I'm writing the book. It is in the time it's left over. So some of us were quite amazed. And he said, well, several years ago, he said, I was pastoring a church, teaching in a Bible school, conducting a medical practice, speaking 8 or 10 times a week in conferences. In addition to that, I ran a tent factory. And he said, I began to get a little weary. He had 8 children also, family and 8 children. And he said, I complained to the Lord once. He said, Lord, I'm just kind of getting overworked here, and I don't know what to do, and I've got to have some help. So he waited for the Lord to tell him, and the answer came back once, well, you could waste him so much time, you wouldn't have any trouble. That's the answer the Lord told him. So he blocked out his day from 6:30 in the morning to 11 o'clock in 15-minute blocks and kept a record of what he did in every block of time for one period. Now, he said he was very generous in what he did, that he didn't consider playing with his kids. It was a waste of time. But he said he concluded when he got through that he was wasting the majority of his time. Because all he had to do was look in the block and see what he did during that time. Now, I don't remember his exact percentage, but the majority of it was wasted. Yes?
Well, I did that last year. I found that I was wasting between 30 and 45 hours a week. And, I mean, I didn't think I was at all. It was just astounding.
I don't know what other schools do, but Colorado College here in town gives every new student a sheet and shows them how much time they spend in the classroom, how much preparation it takes, and how many hours they have after subtracting for their eating and their other things. And no student ever complains about not having time to do his work. You have to see that sheet because a great majority of it is available. Now, this is good, this approach for revelation, but it is not a good approach for a solution. So we're going to leave this approach and go to another. And I'm going to read something to you that is called the $25,000 secret. And the man who got this service paid $25,000 for it. But I'm going to read, and it's free this morning for you. One day years ago, efficiency expert Ivy Lee was interviewing Charles Schwab, president of Bethlehem Steel Company. Lee outlined his organization's service to Schwab and ended by saying, with our service, you'll know how to manage better. Schwab says, I'm not managing as well as I know how now. We don't need more knowing, but more doing. If you can give us something to pep us up to do the things we already know we ought to do, I'll gladly listen to you and pay you anything within reason. Fine, answered Lee. I can give you something in 20 minutes that will step up your doing at least 50%. Okay, said Schwab, let's have it. I've got just about that much time before I leave to catch a train. Lee handed Schwab a blank sheet of notepaper and said, write down the six most important tasks you have to do tomorrow and number them in order of their importance. Now put this paper in your pocket, and the first thing tomorrow morning, look at item one and start working on it until it is finished. Then tackle item two in the same way, then item three, and so on. Do this until quitting time. Don't be concerned if you have only finished one or two. You'll be working on the most important ones. The others can wait. If you can't finish them all by this method, you couldn't have with any other method either. And without some system, you probably would not even have decided which was the most important. Do this every working day. After you've convinced yourself of the value of this system, have your men try it. Try it as long as you wish, and then send me a check for what you think it's worth. In a few weeks, Schwab sent me a check for $25,000, with the letter saying the lesson was the most profitable he'd ever learned. In 5 years, this plan was largely responsible for turning the unknown Bethlehem Steel Company into the largest independent steel producer in the world. And it helped Charles Schwab make $100 million and the best known steel man in the world. What worked for Charles Schwab can work for you. The logic of this is simple. You can do only one thing at a time. If you try to do that one thing while worrying about the other jobs, you can't do all the same time anyway. And you'll take longer on the job you are doing and get still further behind. So always list the jobs you have to do in order of their importance and tackle them one at a time. Forget the others until you're finished. You've finished the one you're working on. Now that seems like that's oversimplifying, doesn't it? But what we're talking about is priorities. If you have never read this book, Spiritual Clinic by Oswald Sanders, don't you dare live another month without having read it through. It is by far the most practical book that's ever been written on Christian problems. There's never been anything produced like it. In one of the chapters, one of them is entitled The Strategic Use of Time. And one quote in here, he says, a fool has been described as a man who has missed a proportion of things. Missed a proportion. He's talking about priorities. Now, he gives a threefold secret here that he calls stop leaks, steady priorities, start planning. But in here, he brings out, our Lord moved through life with majestic and measured tread, never in a hurry, and yet always thronged by demanding crowds, never giving those who sought his help a sense that he had more important concerns than their particular interests. What was his secret? So forth. It's all written out in here. He comments on F.B. Meyer. Let's see what he says about F.B. Meyer. If I can find it here. He tells about John Wesley and Meyer. Like John Wesley, he divided his time into spaces of 5 minutes and chided himself if one of them passed in idleness. He didn't use a 15-minute block. One would expect such a program to create intolerable strain, but not so with Dr. Meyer. According to his biographer, his calm manner was not the sleep of an inactive mind. It was more like the sleep of a spinning top. He was never in a hurry because he was always in haste. just a little while before his death, he said to a friend, "I think I am an example of what the Lord can do with a man who concentrates on one thing at a time." Yes?
Has been real helpful to me. I'm very inclined. It's called The Article Man, and it deals with
managing print and a woman's point of view. My wife gets behind every once in a while with our 7 children, all at home now. And I've heard her make the remark, you know, "Well, I can't do everything." And I said, "Now, if you really believe that, you're on your way to the solution." Actually, I know I'll never be able to do, I don't think, more than 2 or 3% of what I want to do or ought to do. And you won't either. That's a good place to start. Recognize that you can't do everything. God doesn't expect you to do everything. So this is where you start. Now let me suggest something practical that's worked very well for me. And as nobody knows like I do how little that I do and how lazy that I am. The answer to this matter, I think, is not in blocks of time like Dr. Wilson or Dr. Meyer, but it is in priorities, according to what Mr. Lee suggested. I feel that my day is divided up into 3 things, which are projects, routine, and the unplanned. Now I know every day, as you know, that there are 6 or 8 or 12 things that I've got to do. I don't have to do everything. I don't have to do everything today. But this is some of the things that I've got to do. Just some of them have caught up on me unexpected. I told Leroy that I'd take these 4 sessions. Well, I can't get out of it. That's what I've got to do. I may not have to make any preparation, but I intend to be here from 9:30 to 10:30, Wednesday and Thursday. So that's arisen to a place of priority. Projects. I spend a few hours in the office most every day, and some of the things that I work on are projects, but a lot of it is routine. Well, most of the routine is not the same priority as a project. It won't be a whole lot of difference if I don't get this 2 or 3 things done today, well, tomorrow. The main reason to get them done is to get them off my mind. It isn't they have to be done. So then comes the routine. Well, maybe a half of my time is going to be taken up with the unplanned. Then what do you do? Do you show irritation? And what it brought out about Christ? He never gave you the impression that he had more important things to do, because he didn't. So the unplanned. Now, if I've got my projects in pretty good shape, and my routine requirements in pretty good shape, I've got time for God's priorities in there, the things that I didn't plan, which is just as important as the other. But when the time comes that the end of the day is approaching, and these projects, I can see they're not going to get done, you know what I do? I disappear. I just don't go in the office. And what happens to routine things? Well, they either don't get done or somebody else does them. What happens to the unplanned things? I don't let anybody know where I am. So they don't happen. Because they are not priority. This is priority. Up here, number one. I explained this to my secretary once. I think, Joan, I probably talked these over with you a time or two, and I had my present secretary, Joan, work with my secretary for over a year. Yeah, that works good for you, but how about me? Well, not quite as easy. Because she is constantly involved in the unplanned and the routine. Kind of hard for her to escape to work on her top priorities. So I have to help her a little bit in this. So the answer to this problem is in the matter of objectives and priorities, not time. Completing tasks, not in blocks of hours and minutes, but jobs. You do this job until it's done. I think when you divide things up into, now I've got to do this in a half hour. Well, maybe it's less than a half hour job, then you'll waste time. Maybe it's more than a half hour. You can't do it. You've got to organize time according to the completion of a task. And Proverbs says, the desire accomplished is sweet to the soul. And we sure pick up a lot of reserve energy to work on the next task. I feel the most frustrating thing to my wife is the inability, or any housewife, is day after day, to not have a sense of accomplishment. You've just done the same thing over again as you did yesterday. Haven't you? Housewife. Hard to get a sense of accomplishment. Can't get the letters written. Well, my counsel to her, you just pick out three or four things that you're going to do. And if that letter's important, you write it. And if the kids have to wear the same clothes tomorrow they wore today, okay, let them do it. I've never seen that happen, but it's a little trying. Several years ago, I had an aunt who was in a TB sanitarium that I used to visit out in California when I was in the service. I used to write to her two or three times a week, try to cheer her up. Actually, she was a terminal case. And she had apologized every other week when I went to see her for not writing to me. I said, well, why? Why don't you write? She said, well, we're just too busy. And I said, now, what is your routine? Well, 7 o'clock, they wake us up and take our temperature, and then they wash us, then we have breakfast, then we have medication, and then we have a radio program we listen to, and this happens. And this poor woman, flat on her back, never got out of bed, was so busy that she could never write a letter. Now, in her mind, she was busy. I see what had happened, and it can happen to you and me. We get cluttered up with low priority projects. And it isn't that our time isn't fully occupied. It isn't a matter of activity. Why, every minute of every day is active. We're in activity. But it's not very productive, not very satisfying. So if one thing is top priority, something else is a lower priority. And you can't do everything, can you? Can you people do anything? Can you do everything? Do you want to do it? That's one reason I'm glad that for eternity, I think I'm going to get caught up on the things that I want to do, but I'm not going to try to do them all. Any comment? Yes.
Now, say you have people who want to see you during the day. Would you put that under projects and routines?
It's according to what the day is. Now, Some of you people in this class have asked we could have some fellowship, which I'm looking forward to, so I've got a notebook out here with 9 spaces on it. Now, at this point of the week, this is a routine matter. But when Friday comes, Friday morning comes, if I haven't gotten together with those of you I want to get with, then this becomes a project. Because it's got to be done today or never. But as of now, it's routine. And if something higher comes in, even though I've got a date with you, I may ask you to reschedule. Today and tomorrow. But Friday, no. Is that answered? The way I approach it. And I say, nobody but me knows how lazy and unproductive that I am. And how much time is wasted. Dr. Oswald Sanders brings out in his book, the use of time determines what kind of a man you are. I'm not built to ever get to be a captive of a situation like that. If you're in a situation like that, I'd get out of it. If you're in a situation where you can't do what God wants you to do, get out of it. If you're doing second priority work. Now, we're going to have a session on organization that shows you, and I'm sure most of you are familiar with this, how to utilize the efforts of others to do things so that there'll be time for you to do your priorities. We said yesterday, leadership is accomplishing your objectives through the efforts of others. And very often, the reason that we don't have time where we're involved with other people is a poor organization. And we'll go into that tomorrow. Any other comment or question? Well, is it in your mind what the things you've got to do the rest of the day that you ought to do? I hope that you will have the satisfaction when you go to bed tonight of saying the desire accomplished is sweet to the soul. And every one of us have probably utilized 10 times as much energy worrying about a job as it takes to do it. If you've got a letter overdue, just go do it. Just go do it. Don't talk about it, worry about it, just do it. Okay, now, are there any comments any of you have under topics that you think would be profitable for us to discuss before the week's over? I've got a few more things written down here, but I'd rather hear what you're interested in.
Yes? Can you avoid meeting with people, not meeting with people, just being with people in order to get your projects there?
Some of them, when I'm asked a question like that, let me say that my answer is personal and does not in any way reflect the necessarily reflect the views of the organization I represent. If I could use my wife for an example, she gets more done between meetings and after church in getting with people than most anybody I ever know. But to me, I feel that the calculated risk, that's the only thing I can think about here, but the odds of God using you in a significant way in a curbstone conference are infinitesimal. Now, you don't avoid people. You mingle with them. But you can spend all your time just mingling with people and being around, can't you? I'd rather have one solid 15-minute interview with one person than to brush shoulders and say hi. have a cup of coffee with 50, personally. Now, a lot of people don't feel that way about it. I think meeting with people should be a project, a high priority project in there. But I hope you understand what I say, that you can use all your time just in casual time with people and never do anything solid. So make meeting with people a project. Now, you make a casual contact with somebody at a coffee break, then make a date. Get a look. Well, looks like we're over time here. Let's conclude with a word of prayer.